You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, it is a good evening to you, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. It is a Thursday, and it is one of my favorite days, by the way. Not that the other days are not my favorite on the show. They are very, very much my favorites as well. But this evening that we do, of course, every single Thursday, that evening is a very special one because this is where we bring you the person behind the person. And this is where we try and unpack, particularly for young people, to just get a sense of, you know, the people that we look up to, especially within the Adventist community. We must give them their flowers while they are here. We've got this thing that we do of wanting to give people flowers when they are not here. But anyways, it is a Thursday. I'd like to hear from you. +27 734 703520. That is +27 734 703520. That's how you can talk to us right here on Business Sense on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. My guest and a shapeshifter today, this evening, is none other than our elder Caleb Sibeko, a seasoned business executive with over two decades of industry experience in technology. Now passionate about innovation, he has been instrumental in helping organizations with their transformational projects, particularly when it comes to technology. It's a mouthful, a lot, but he's joining us on the line to tell us a little bit about that. Evening, my elder.
Good evening to you, sir.
How are you today?
I'm good, man. You know, as one friend of mine would say, sweet like a lemon.
Lemon is never sweet.
With the challenges of life, we continue to thrive.
Aye, my elder, lemon is not sweet. I disagree. Lemon.
You must rework your taste buds a bit.
I think my taste buds are tainted, as it were.
A little bit tainted. They need to be refocused.
I think Ellen White would agree with you that your taste buds need to be. Well, thank you so much, my elder, for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
The pleasure is mine. Pleasure
Fantastic.
Is mine.
We've got this segment every single Thursday. It is Shapeshifter, and this is where we try and encourage young people, particularly maybe some who might not even have the time to come to you, right? Maybe the bravery to even come to you and say, how did you make it to be where you are? And this is where that conversation becomes quite important. But also there are those that are looking at you like, okay, you know, we also want to get there as well. So that's why we have this particular segment, and that's why we appreciate you coming in and agreeing to talk to us. But Asbuyele Mvake, let's go back.
Sure.
Yeah. It's an odd question. I'm sure you've gotten this question for over 20 years. Like, who are you? Tina, as Business Sense, we know you. But some of our listeners who may not know you, how do you describe yourself?
It's a very important question. I think anything else in life without a proper background and people obviously having a solid understanding of that becomes very difficult to relate or to be able to build on top of it. So in a nutshell, my name is Caleb Sibeko, as you've rightfully stated. I hail from a town called or a place called Luhlure. It's right in the outskirts of northern KZN.
Okay.
There's a town there. I think what is mostly known about the place is the game park, which people would visit, you know, as part of their leisure.
Yeah.
But for me, that is basically home. That is where I come from. So I've really come out of a family that is an Adventist family. I think I'm a third or fourth generation Adventist in my family.
Yeah.
So basically we've been taught, the etiquettes of, behaving in the church or growing in the church from observing our parents and grandparents.
Yeah.
Studied obviously during my elementary years back in
KZN.
I then moved to University of Durban Westville to earn my tertiary degree.
Yeah.
And then from there it's just been an opportunity of opportunity, you know, by way of working for different multinational organizations.
Yes.
So in the background, that is me.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll unpack most of this during our discussion.
Definitely.
But if I were to just provide a summarized and a very clear overview of who I am from a background perspective, that's me.
Ah, fantastic. Luhlure, you said.
Yeah. Yes.
Ah, okay.
I always say it's a metropolitan city.
That's a good way to describe it, actually. So for people who may not know, can you describe what it was like growing up? And I'm sure over the years it has changed into something else with democracy, you know, of black people getting their rights to their land and all that. But growing up, when you were growing up, what was it like?
So, like all rural areas, you know, back in those years, you know, it was one of the areas that looked forward to some form of urbanization, some form of progress and development by way of having electricity, you know, being introduced into some of the homesteads. I mean, in those years, it was a big privilege just to have the Eskom line brought closer to where you are. Our house as such was one of the very first ones in the area that got to have electricity. You know, the streets were dusty, you know, obviously because, you know, tarred roads were at that time, you know, nothing, you know, that we have right now. You know, we used to walk for long distances to school, we used to fetch water from from the rivers, you know, treat the water to a point where it is palatable for human consumption. So basically all the general hardships that, you know, young people in rural areas would go through is what we went through. Interestingly enough for me, you know, because, you know, that background was not necessarily as a result of us, you know, originating from Kikuyu, but it was a result of my father moving from Springs.
Okay.
He wanted to reside in KZN.
Yeah.
Us obviously having to grow from a young age in that area.
Yeah.
So we did not have the, you know, the luxury, I would call it the luxury, of obviously having to, you know, grow some livestock and some livestock, you know, like rural boys would do.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we had our fair share of growing under those circumstances and having those circumstances shaping us to deal with the challenges that we are facing today.
I want to get into those challenges because I don't know whether you were cushioned by Adventist parents, right? And so some of the things that maybe young people at the time, say elementary years, your 10 years, 11 years and all that they may have been, I suppose, exposed to because of your Christian background, you were stopped, not really exposed to, even though you may have wanted to and all that. But when you walked out of your house, what were some of the socio-economic challenges you could at least see?
Well, to your words and to your point, I mean, obviously growing in an Adventist family does provide an advantage, comparatively speaking, such that, you know, some of the things that one would have wanted to do, you wouldn't get an opportunity of doing.
Yes, definitely.
And, and then when you reflect, you know, back in time, you then you'd see the advantage of being grown in an Adventist family.
Yeah.
But if you look at other kids who did not have the privileges we had, some were exposed to, you know, things like smoking you know, at a very young age. Some were exposed to things like drinking alcohol. I mean, as you would know, in rural areas, you know, for lack of recreational facilities, what boys would be exposed to are things like your alcohol, be it home brew or be it, you know, your westernized type of alcohol beverages.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that would, in a way, influence some of their behaviors, which then obviously may lead to things like, you know, becoming criminals of some sort. You know, engaging in acts of violence of some sort, you know, and various other, you know, negative tendencies that young boys would find themselves growing up, and such that, you know, at schools and obviously in the community, you know, people would pass remarks like, look up to, you know, the Sbego boys, look at how cultured they are. But you can see that it wasn't because we did not have those innate capabilities.
Yeah.
It was purely because of the upbringing in the family that helped to shape us and to ward off some of those tendencies.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. And you would say, like you said, as you reflect back, I don't know why politicians like hindsight, but I suppose with that hindsight as well, you look back and you're like, we were cushioned and so this has shaped me to be the man that I am today.
Absolutely true. I mean, over and above just being cushioned, I also want to believe that, you know, God has his own purposes for people.
Yes,
and he would take you through a particular trajectory without you realizing.
Yeah.
so that you can be able to represent him in a particular platform at a particular time in a manner that he knows best. But nonetheless, you know, we were cushioned. We can say now it was for a particular purpose, and we can only thank God for that.
Fantastic. That's really amazing. So, primary school, what are some of the fondest memories you can remember of primary school?
Man, you know what? One of the things that I think was one of the best things was school assembly.
Okay.
Prayers at school assembly. Okay. You know, where for each and every, or before each and every class, we would all assemble as the entire school with our teachers.
Yeah.
And would start our day by having, you know, that prayer session.
Yes.
You know, reading of the word.
Yeah.
And then prayer.
Yeah.
You know, by the entire school.
Yeah.
In fact, to the point where as scholars would even recite the Lord's Prayer, you know. Which I think, even though obviously it was recited in English, in those days English was, you know, very much strange to us. You know,
when people say
English never liked us. Back in the days, you know, it did not want us
because
some of the words that we were saying.
Yeah.
When you realize, you know, how wrong you were, you can always thank God for the Holy Spirit, who always at every opportunity interpret the words
and
use the correct words on your behalf.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that taught us the discipline of being prayerful. So I think it's one of the great highlights at school. Number two, the respect that we had for teachers. Teachers for us were role models that we look up to. They offered parental guidance to us and proper mentorship.
Yeah.
I think at heart they also had a desire to want to see us succeed, becoming better citizens that would help towards nourishing or improving our own societies. So as such, schooling, I would say, during those years, and I'm saying this for lack of a better word, had a much more focused purpose.
Yeah.
And that purpose was towards developing the society, developing the community. You knew that you went to school because you wanted to be a better person. And if you remain disciplined, you will become a better person.
You will
So the pain and the suffering of the past motivated us to want to escape the, you know, the repeat of that cycle by becoming successful, so that our children and our future generations don't have to relive the same experiences you went through.
Sure. I mean, that's very deep for someone who was at primary at that time, to think about the fact that, you know, you have to work very hard, you have to do this so that you take yourself out of this, you know, situation that you find yourself in, and at least create something for your children. What?
Of course.
What,
I mean, just on that thought, I was reflecting with a high school friend of mine.
Yeah.
But obviously, we reflect now that we're working,
obviously,
elderly people, so to speak. And he says, you know, one of the reasons why he wanted to become successful was purely because there wasn't even a single person in his family that had gone to school.
Yeah.
So he was going to be the first one.
Yeah.
And while no one saw the benefit of going to school, he had to go through extra activities of running away from home just so that he can find himself at school. You know? So really, if you look at some of the individual accounts of people who lived during those years and beyond, you'd see that there was an intention to really to want to become better people, not only for themselves, but for their families and for their communities.
And I would say that was the same for you as well.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. That's amazing. People get naughty when they get to high school. Were you the naughty one?
I mean, boys are boys.
Boys are boys. Listen,
we can never run away from
the
fact.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. You can never escape the fact that, you know, you have the same chemical reactions in your body that would obviously subsist in the bodies of other boys as well. You know, learning by trial and error, and obviously having to deal with the huge amounts of testosterone in your body that pushes you to the edge every now and then, where you would accelerate your mind to certain lengths, to the point of riding in the zone of danger, without applying the equal amount of stopping. So let's be conscious of where to stop and where to stop. So I was a boy like all other boys. Explored like all other boys, naughty as other boys would be. I also got my beatings. I remember when we were at high school at some point in time, we would report to the office of the principal every now and then, basically to explain some of the actions that we, or acts that we had done that were not obviously expected of us. So, but you look at all the compounded effect of those experiences, and you would say that I couldn't have been what I am had it not been for the total sum of all those things.
Sometimes we wonder why God doesn't intervene, but it's precisely for things like this where we learn through those things that we go through, good or bad, eh?
That's correct. I mean, you have to have a reason why you're not doing a certain thing.
Exactly.
You know? Even if that reason could be, you suffering some of the things that you could have avoided. I mean, take the story of the prodigal son.
Yes.
The reason why he remembered home, was because of the teachings. And when life beat him, he remembered.
Hey.
So life must beat us up so that we can also remember and be able to do better.
I think young people wouldn't like that. They're like, no, we don't want to take life's beatings. Like, no. And then 1990, you went into law, right? And and this is my question is twofold there. You went into law during apartheid time, so that's the first thing. You would have to, I suppose, deal with the looks, the language, the culture shock, the English, and all those sort of stuff at university. That's one. And two, how did you traverse that?
Very much, interesting set of, I think variables for the time. Number one, I mean, Afrikaans was compulsory for law degrees in those years.
Sure.
So I had to study Afrikaans.
So praat jy Afrikaans, sê my ou.
Ek het dit geleer.
That's okay.
Not only in high school. In high school, we used to recite poems. Like Opa, and all those things. But at varsity, you had now to obviously demonstrate comprehension of the Afrikaans language.
Hey.
Purely because, certain judgments and certain rules would have to be articulated in Afrikaans. He also had to learn Latin, which was obviously very, very strange, in many ways. To date, we know that some of the rules in law are basically extracted from Latin. But also the fact that, we would learn something like criminal procedure, which teaches you, what is the process before the police would want to, obviously reprimand or would want to do whatever that they need to do in the normal daily routine.
Yeah.
And criminal procedure would tell you that these are the rights that you have as a person.
Yeah.
But during those years, like you're saying, it was during political upheaval, and the circumstances were very much rife. So there wasn't a way of relating to why criminal procedure when I actually have to run away from police when police show up. So it was really an era, a watershed kind of a moment where we had to learn certain discipline at the time when there were political changes that were taking effect. But nonetheless, I mean, that was our lot for those years.
Yeah.
And we learned from it, and we're able to obviously deal with that reality.
Yeah. And Afrikaans as a culture shock at university, did you have to rely on certain people and I think just to get by?
Well, interestingly enough for me, and I would say not just interestingly, but fortunate enough, I mean, I did Afrikaans at high school.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, it was one of the compulsory languages, which I studied up to, grade 12.
Yeah.
So there was that background, which made it much more easier for one to be able to cope with Afrikaans at tertiary level. It wasn't that much of a struggle.
It wasn't that much of a struggle.
It's just that when I thought I was done with it, I got a rude awakening when I got to tertiary that this thing is still following me.
You're going nowhere. Why law, though?
That's another great question. Mm. So law was not necessarily my choice in terms of what I sat down and carefully, through a process of career guidance, chose as a course to follow.
Yeah.
I mean, number one, we hardly had good career guidances those years. Number two, the scope of available areas of study, let alone, considering the fact that it was a restricted area, we were only restricted to certain disciplines.
Mm.
But, we didn't know what we didn't know.
Yes.
So it's either you were going to be a teacher or you were going to be a doctor or a nurse or you were going to be a policeman or a lawyer, because obviously of their prominence due to civil rights and stuff like that. And so I gravitated towards that, that opportunity, because I did not see myself as a teacher.
Mm.
And also the fact that I had good grades from high school made it easier for me to obviously being admitted in that field.
Mm.
So it wasn't always a choice.
Mm.
It was mainly an opportunity that was available, and I had to take advantage of it based on a certain set of variables that I was exposed to at that time.
Would I then be correct to say, if one looks at your career, it's more on the telco. Is the telco your passion?
So here's another great. I think that's another great point to raise.
Mm.
So the I think the ability that I have, which is something that no one can take away from me, is that of solving problems.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Because you must have relevance to a certain aspect in order for you to be able to thrive.
Yeah,
and what I'm saying is that, over and above just doing a law degree, obviously proving the capability that, one can be able to understand different concepts.
Yeah.
I then got an opportunity to work for a company called Gillette in the capacity of sales and marketing. And basically that opened up an array of opportunities and capabilities, especially in the ICT space. So, I mean, I worked for Gillette, solving customer problems and issues. And then from there, I moved to Telkom. And from that point onwards, it has just been, various multinationals in the ICT space.
Yeah.
And obviously with the responsibility of solving customer problems. Whether it be transformational agendas from an ICT perspective, but the main is there is a problem, you have a solution, there is pain, you have an antidote, and you are able to basically make the two meet so that there's mutual benefit for both entities.
And it sounds, if one looks at today's corporate world, right, over and above one's qualifications or whatever, it's that ability, that soft skill to solve problems that's required in the markets. How do you go about it? There are young people who are probably, trying to determine where their lives might be going, and that's a part of solving the problem. I think that's why we hated meds. We didn't realize it was actually helping us to look at problems and problem solve. We're like, hey, these things we're solving for X forever and ever, but it was actually about building the ability to solve. So how do you go about it? How do you go about solving problems?
So yes, maybe just your point as a background. I mean, look at the beautiful life of Noah. I mean, God raised Noah to help solve a particular problem for the human race.
Yeah.
Floods were coming, and God wanted the human race to have continuity, and Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord.
Hey.
So people may say, God told Noah to build the ark, but to the people who lived during those days, Noah invented the ark.
Because
all they know is that there was this guy who came up with this great idea, even though they never could relate what it was for, but he came with this great idea.
Yeah.
Now take that and plow it into our everyday lives.
Yeah.
You know, whether be it whatever background you have from an educational point of view, be it as a doctor, be it as a scientist, be it as a teacher, be it whatever the field may be. The intent is for you to come across as a solution to a particular problem that is faced by humanity or that is faced by society. In my space, obviously, what is looked at is the ability for efficiency, is the ability for automation, is the ability for doing things better. It's the ability for coming up with platforms that enable customers or that enables organizations to be able to do better out there. And, you know, whether we like it or not, the IT platform provides such an opportunity for many organizations to be able to thrive across different, you know, industries. The common platform that we find as a platform that is much more, ubiquitous is the IT platform. If you also look towards the following industrialization, they all basically hinge around IT. I'm talking about robotics. I'm talking about, you know, the fourth industrial revolution. All those basically piggyback off the IT platform, and they talk about solutions of the future. And those solutions of the future that would impact the lives of people and make them better are still within the paradigm of offering solutions, being a problem solver towards humanity as a whole.
Sure, that's a mouthful, and it sounds like this IT technology kind of found you, right? But when you look back at it, what would you say are some of the one or two major challenges that you think this was a lot? Even though we went through it, we were able to solve for it naturally as a problem solver. But within the work that you're doing, this was a big challenge without necessarily giving out names.
Well, look, for me, you know, the biggest motivation more than anything else is one where, you know, you are able to bring meaningful change to the lives of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's make that very much simpler.
Yeah.
Look at kids at school, you know, and look at the curriculum that obviously is offered them. In most schools, you'd find that that curriculum already has got things like coding in place to enable them to be economically active even when they're school leavers, as opposed to having to go through tertiary institutions and such competencies. So for me, more than anything else, what's important is to try and simplify the use of technology so that everyone can be able to feel it in their different spaces of life, you know, in their day-to-day activities. They should be able to basically feel the impact of technology. I mean, we're using cell phones nowadays. When you wake up in the morning, the cell phone tells you what temperature you should expect. And as such, you know, you then are able to choose the clothes that you should wear. I mean, embedded behind that weather, you know, reporting that you receive are deep analytics that collect data and interpret it to you so that you are able to then make an informed decision about what to wear, probably where to go to, you know, what route to take based on, you know, some of the deep analytics that are surfacing as, you know, your useful apps, but deeper than that is basically analytical algorithms that are enabling your life to become much more better. I'm not sure whether am I addressing your question.
You did.
You know, you can't speak big concepts that you can't relate to. You need to speak about something that becomes, that is part of your day-to-day life. So that young boys can be able to relate and be able to see where technology can help them.
2 decades now, what would you say is the one lesson you've learned?
Well, the biggest lesson that I've learned, you know, and I think it's one that is very much important, is the lesson of being disciplined in whatever that you do. You know, a lot of, you know, great, you know, black males, And I'm being specific here when I say black males, would falter at an area of ill discipline. You know, And by being disciplined, I'm saying take whatever you're doing very seriously. Eesh. Take yourself very seriously as an individual.
Yeah.
Understand that you have, you know, an objective that you want to achieve in life.
Mm.
And in order for you to be able to achieve those objectives, you need to be very much disciplined about your life.
Yeah.
You know, you need to live by a certain set of rules.
Yeah.
And stick by that set of rules.
Yeah.
You know, and not allow yourself to obviously see yourself seeing something different to what you have set to do for yourselves. When people see you taking yourself serious, then they're able to come through and help you to achieve those objectives. It's very much important for our young people, especially our young boys, to take themselves very seriously, especially in the world in which we live, which is not configured towards having males being successful.
Yeah.
I'm saying this deliberately and without being apologetic.
Yes.
Not configured
to
allow males to become successful.
Yeah.
And the only way you will be successful is when you take yourself serious and when you discipline yourself on the path that you want to achieve.
Yeah.
So that you can be noticed that you are a person that is focused and who is driving towards a particular goal, and then people will be attracted towards you to help you succeed.
But some will see you as boring.
Well, of course, they will see you as boring. I mean, by its inherent in being disciplined is that there are certain things that you will not do.
Yes.
I mean, when people go out to obviously, you know, enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
At night, you know, you would be studying because you're disciplined.
Yeah.
One of the things that really help us harbor instances like, you know, being viewed as boring or viewing discipline as something that is not that much important.
Mm.
It is because we are not aware of the times in which we live.
Hey. Yeah.
More, maybe better for me, because at my age, obviously I'm working towards legacy.
Yeah.
But for young boys and young girls, particularly in the Black Nation, there are a lot of odds nowadays. Especially when you look at the fact that you've got robotics coming down the line, which would become a threat to livelihood and the availability of jobs as they are today.
Definitely.
So you need to be able to choose your career very carefully and then be able to be disciplined and focused so that you can be able to achieve. The flip side of that, you know, in other words, the failure to focus, the failure to be disciplined, is guaranteed failure and guaranteed disaster.
Sure.
So it is as blunt as that now.
Yo.
Because if you look at the rate at which, you know, the job market is shedding jobs, you know, you can be sure of the fact that the situation will not improve.
Yeah.
It will continue to become worse.
Yeah.
Now, speaking to an Adventist boy or girl, that is where now the knowledge of prophecy comes into effect. Because we know that this world must come to an end, that nothing better will come out of where we are right now. Every available opportunity, use it wisely. Focus like a laser so that you are able to achieve more.
As we draw towards the end, I want to ask this one. Imposter syndrome, how have you dealt with that, or you've never had that challenge?
Let me ask you to unpack that a little bit.
So in all the executive positions that you have held and continue to hold, was there ever a moment where you felt, I don't deserve to be here, or you felt, why me? Why am I the one? And in most cases, most people who experience that, you find that it leads them to fail when they were given the opportunity, because someone saw the potential in them and then they were brought in to head up a department, they were brought in to be part of the executive team, and there's always that thing, why me? I don't deserve to be here. Especially if they look at their peers and they see someone there, this one has got a doctorate, this one has got a professor, what, and they're like, why am I even sitting here? And that, if you allow it, most people kind of leads them down a rabbit hole that they don't come back from. Did you ever have such feelings in the executive positions you've held?
Not at all. And I'll qualify
by
saying that. And I'm not saying that there were never intentions.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, not very clear to me,
yeah,
to want to read me to a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
For me, the attitude has always been that of being disciplined.
Okay. Okay.
It has always been that of excelling in every opportunity that is given to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has been that of proving that you can be able to do this thing and do it better.
Mm.
I mean, for instance, in some of my career opportunities, I would find myself in a banking space, which is predominantly white.
Yeah.
Not only white male, but also white Afrikaner.
Yes, you know? Yes.
And I would thrive in that space purely because, you know, of the knowledge of Afrikaans, which then I would use to my advantage for me to earn the right to be heard, for me to be able to break into that barrier that is referred to as Afrikaans speaking, and then be able to thrive in that space, you know. So that's why I'm saying it's important for a person to take themselves seriously.
So
that they are able to take proper advantage of every opportunity that presents itself to them. You know, so that we are able to prove wrong even those who may think that you would not be able to succeed in a particular space.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, look, sometimes success may mean doing double hours for you to prove yourself.
Yes.
Sometimes success may mean not going to certain places where your friends would be, purely because you are focused on proving yourself that you can be able to do it.
Yeah.
For me, what I know is all of us have a chance to be able to succeed.
Yes.
It may cost you a little bit more than it does others, but it's an opportunity anyway. Take it with both hands, run with it, don't waste it. At the end of the day, you are the one that will benefit out of it.
Sure. Okay. We're running out of time, but I want to ask this one. Your relationship with money, how would you describe it?
Yes. That's a very important question.
Yeah.
The relationship with money. Look, for me, money is a tool.
Okay.
It is a tool to be used. Correctly. You know, if you know that money is a tool that is important for us as a black community in particular to become, to improve, be it myself as a person by way of upgrading myself through various, education opportunities, be it my immediate family by way of getting them to improve and become better than myself, be it the community in which I live by way of contributing to those who are less fortunate so that they can be able to thrive.
Yeah.
Whichever way and however you view the odds against you, you have to have a relationship that informs you that money is a tool to be used wisely.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you don't want to be carried away by thinking that you are there to solve each and every problem.
Yes,
you've got to balance that by having,
you
know, very good, you know, money skills, you know, skills that enable you to save correctly, skills that enable you to use money in a proper manner. But nonetheless, you should not be controlling money. I'm sorry, money should not be controlling you. You should be controlling it so that you use it as a positive tool. I mean, I was very much taken aback when I listened to a comment that was made by this friend of mine. He says, much as we can say that rich people are controlled by money.
Yeah.
It is also true of the fact that poor people are controlled by poverty. And some of them end up not wanting to contribute towards society because they always want to play the poverty-stricken card, you know. It's very much important to balance everything that you do by looking at the intentions that you want to achieve and the disciplines that you need to put in place and the focus that you need to have in order to achieve those. So I subscribe to a Jewish view that says use money positively, use money as a developmental tool, have a positive relationship with money, don't allow money to control you, but always be in control of it so that you can be able to live in a manner that also benefit others without you losing with some of the prospectal developments that focus on yourself.
I'm sure there's one mistake you've done, though. Probably you've squandered money here and there. What are some of those?
Yo.
Yeah.
To your point.
Yeah.
I would say that it is important. Financial management
yes.
should not be a discipline that comes at tertiary
yes.
or primary school.
Yeah.
I think at every stage of development, at every stage of development, financial management skills should be compulsory for people to, so that we get used to them. You know, I want to believe that obviously, if I was disciplined enough in certain areas of financial management, I would have probably used some of the opportunities that I had much more better.
Yeah.
Probably, I would have invested in certain good places for a good return. You know, I would have avoided certain purchases of luxury items. You know, by looking at how better to use it so that I can get a much better return on the investment. I look at some of my friends who've had the advantage of great financial, you know, discipline.
Yeah.
And you look at the financial freedom that they have now. It's something that I could have had as well.
Yeah.
Had I obviously invested a bit of time towards acquiring those financial disciplines.
Okay.
So yes, there are regrets.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain things I could have done better. But that now that I know, obviously, the next opportunity that comes, I'll do things much more differently in the area of money.
What advice would you give your younger self if you look back at the years?
If I were to give advice to the younger me, I would say, you know, pay attention towards the trends, you know, developmental trends in the world. You know, I want to believe that if we had what young people have to do. If we had a view of what is available out there, you know, in the world in terms of career choices, so that we can invest in our career developments. In other words, from elementary school to tertiary as a growth path that leads and lands you to where you want to be, I would have done much more better. So that is why I'm saying it's very much important for our young people to be constantly aware of the odds that they face so that they can make their choices right and be able to be disciplined in those choices and drive their growth in a manner that will lend them to where they want to see themselves in the future.
Related to that, then, what would you do differently?
I would have probably chosen a career in IT.
Okay.
From a studying point of view, as opposed to law, I would have probably gone for computer science. I never knew there was
even
like computer science when we grew up.
Lawyer, liar, is that a myth?
It's not necessarily a myth, but
okay.
if you look at the impact, I mean, look, it's important to have lawyers, very much important, and I want to believe that it's one of the great careers that are available out there. But look at the impact of AI and robotics, and you look at some of the jobs that are threatened. Law is one of the of the jobs that are threatened as a result of that. You know, so. Looking down the years, there's going to be a steady decline of law-related opportunities. I mean, even nowadays, you've got a lot of graduates, law graduates, that have suddenly become redundant. I would say to them, you know, if they would consider some of the training in the area of AI, you know, probably they could be able to find usefulness of even
the
their training, but obviously transferred into the AI space. So I think those are the things that becomes important for people to take note of. So that we constantly are able to reinvent ourselves and be always useful. Whatever the stages of life we find ourselves
in. What's next for you? Such an illustrious career, over 20 years of working. Is there still something that you're after?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And it's something that I'm very much passionate about. I'm very much passionate about the development of boys.
Okay.
Lately.
Yeah.
Especially black boys.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say that if we as society do not offer ourselves, especially I mean people like myself that have gone through the various ropes, and if we don't offer ourselves for mentorship, you know, opportunities, for guidance opportunities, especially for young boys, you know, they will definitely fail. I'm saying this because we live in a society that is feminist oriented.
Yeah, yeah.
And for good reasons.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, if I'm a father and I've got daughters, I want those daughters to thrive. And
definitely.
I want them to become the best in life.
Definitely.
I don't want them to be looked down upon because they're female and probably be not paid accordingly because they're female.
Yeah.
But here's the other side of the problem. That daughter of mine will get married to a scion who does not have great opportunities because he's male.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
And unless we mentor them and we guide them, you know, then they will consistently fail in life. That consistent failure in life would add towards the corrosion of our families, towards the corrosion of our communities, towards the obliteration of this good thing that God had put in place, which is called marriage. Now, you can believe, and you can take my word for it,
that,
you know, the opportunities that have been made, the good and great opportunities, which I also support, that have been made available for our women folk, have made marriage now a choice rather than a necessity. Because society, whereas society used to inform that you need to get a good husband to take care of you, now you can take care of yourself. But now the person who had the merit of becoming a good husband does not have the great opportunities in order for them to be able to be that. Now, if you're not aware of these variables, negative variables that are facing our young boys, I think we'll be basically doing a disfavor if we don't coach and guide them so that they don't hate women, they don't end up become violent, but they understand how best to make use of the status quo of the current situation so that they become families that can be able to thrive. So I'm pouring myself into that space now where I provide mentorship for young boys in particular,
purely
because, you know, they need to be able to thrive also.
Ah, beautiful. 10 seconds or less. Any final thoughts? Any final words? Words of encouragement to listeners, young people, especially that look up to you, look up to you as a mentor, elder, and father, and all that. How would you sum it up?
I would sum it up by putting it this way. You know, when God created men, especially males, you can translate that into a strategy and say that for God, the strategy for the survival of humanity, of family, of society, is around males. We need to take ourselves serious. We need to obviously stand up and be credible providers. We need to stand up and be credible partners.
Yeah.
We need to stand up and stop being viewed as negative people, you know, and obviously stop feeding to that narrative by taking ourselves serious so that we can be able to thrive in the life in which we live. So to every young person, to every male person out there, know that God counts on you. But you also need to take yourself serious.
Take yourself serious.
So that
serious.
You can be able to achieve those objectives that God wants you to achieve. Unless we wake up and play our part the right way that we're supposed to be playing it as males, our society will continue to suffer. So don't give up wherever you may be. Don't give up. There is help available. Look for a good, credible mentor that can mentor you as a young man, especially when you don't, when you see life as not making sense. Do not want to take away your life, but look for someone that you can talk to, someone that you can relate with or relate to, that will help guide you so that you become a better person. But also those who are available, you know, the elder people that are out there, make yourselves available to young people so that they can tap into your reservoir of information.
You've tapped into your reservoir and we've been inspired. And thank you so much for sharing with us your journey, your life, and where God has taken you to. And we pray that God continues to bless you and enlarge your territory. And I think I love the mentorship program. Sure, we'll check in with you once again to just talk about that in detail and how we can also get involved as well in that. But I love the concept and may God make it grow. And God bless you as well, my elder. And thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. That was our elder there, of course, talking to us about his own life and his own journey and what he went through. I am certainly, certainly not going to even attempt to jinx this one. It was beautiful.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.